had the comment last time about Theodosius authorizing the destruction of pagan temples and then having them replaced by churches. So Brickman emphasized that they were pagan temples, not the Jewish temple. So an example of what these are. Oops. Oops. Oh. There we go. That's interesting. It's working here, it's just not showing in there. Hold on a second. Let me do it again. Is it any better? There we go. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a Roman Republic coin. It's got this Venus on the obverse. And the reverse shows a temple of Venus on this little rocky hill. So it's got the sort of the city gates around it, which is here. And then the city wall, I should say, and a gate here, and then temples up here. So there were temples everywhere on the center of Rome, on the Capitoline Hill, had several temples, including a temple to Jupiter. This is a coin a little later. This is now a phallus of Maxentius. But the reverse here is a Roman temple. I should say a temple of Roma. So that's a figure of Roma seated in the temple, and it's got six columns and archway. So there were lots and lots and lots of temples for lots and lots and lots of different gods and personifications. And there are a bunch of coins that commemorate them that way. Small denominations. The very first coin that I showed was the third stater from Lydia. I mentioned that there were also six staters and 12ths and 24ths, all the way down to 196 staters. This is a 196 stater. It's a third the diameter of a dime. But even it has a design on it. That's a little lotus there. So this was sort of the smallest copper coin you could get in ancient times. So this is actually from Byblos in Phoenicia. And this is roughly 400 BC or so. I don't have a good attribution for this one. But it's very tiny. But that is a U.S. dime. The phrase "In God We Trust" is on all of our coinage. There's another question. So this coin is a U.S. 2-cent piece. In 1861, there was a letter sent to the Secretary of the Treasury where, this was the beginning of the Civil War, there was a sort of resurgence of religious feeling, and then a reverend named M.R. Watkinson from Pennsylvania, he sent a letter saying, well, can we represent this on coinage? And the Secretary of the Treasury thought this was a good idea. He told the director of the Mint to come up with ideas. The guy did, and then the Secretary of the Treasury revised them a little bit, and then he came up with the phrase, "In God We Trust," and they wanted to put them on coins. The Mint itself doesn't have the authority to change coinage, but Congress does. So it had to go through Congress, but Congress approved it in April 22, 1864. So the first coin that has "In God We Trust" on it is the 2-cent U.S. coin of 1864, and that's one of those. Not in circulation now, but in this room there is. So, yeah. Yeah, the 2-cent coin didn't last very long. It was only, about 10, 12 years, something like that. And that's the inscription there. It's a little hard to see in the picture. That's a little close-up. So it's on that ribbon on top of the shield. And it was... Sorry? It was a person named M.R. Watkinson, who's a reverend, who said that we should do something like that. But it was the director of the Secretary of the Treasury, Simon P. Chase, who said, well, let's use this phrase. So, and that's been on coins ever since. So that's a reverse, 2 cents and a wreath. Mm-hmm, yep.
So whenever they decided to do that, the decision by Congress was a ball coin around that?
It was phased in over a few years on different kinds of coins, but once it became in every denomination, that stayed in every denomination.
So was it a hard sell to put that, to get people?
It didn't seem to be. It only took 3 years from its creation to Congress saying, yeah, go for it. So there seemed to be just a lot more people supporting that kind of idea, where now you have people trying to oppose that kind of idea. So. And it's interesting that 1864, the war was still on too. So this all happened during the Civil War period. So fines and hoards. Another question was, where do you find coins like this? I mentioned the Pristina hoard as one example. Like a lot of the smaller denomination ones, the more common ones, you know, farmers find in their fields, you know, metal detectorists come across things. This particular one, the Pristina hoard, it was found near Pristina, Yugoslavia. I mean, it was over 10,000 denarii. That was a military payment that just never made it. So it was dug up in, what, 1979 is when it was found. It took 20 years to sort of make its way out of the country when he had political instability in the Balkan War. But since it wasn't really recognized as government treasure, it's pretty much legit. So then it was sold publicly, and I managed to get 5 coins from it, and that was one of them. So that Septimius Severus that I showed you last time is one of the coins from that hoard. Here's another one that was found. I unfortunately don't have these to pass around because they're not found by me. This particular one, it's called a double leopard because it has two leopards on it someplace. I guess at the feet here. This is the largest gold coin that, or the first large gold coin that Britain issued. And there was a metal detectorist that just found this, just as when he was detecting. It's the third example known. It's the only one in private hands. The other two are in museums. And it sold for £460,000. A pound, last time I looked on Sunday, was $2.05. So that's nearly $1 million coin. We don't live in Britain. It'd be a lot easier if we could just go down the street and start, you know, looking around. Here's another one. This is an Anglo-Saxon king of Britain, Coenwulf. This coin was minted in London. It was found about 40 miles away on a riverbank. Just someone else just came across one. And this one was sold for $650,000, actually U.S. dollars. There was a hoard actually just found this year, a Viking hoard. So these are Viking coins. This was also found in Britain. And you have this father and son metal detectorist team just kind of going around finding things. This was found in January of this year. It consists of 617 coins and a bunch of other things, like bracelets and other and spoons and pots and things. And just last week, it was declared officially treasure. If you find something of this magnitude, you have to sort of go through a governmental process to have it sort of validated and to see if you can have any profits from it or if you can, you know, how it works. So this was valued at £750,000, so about $1.5 million. So these things are out there. I mean, if people can just go look and find them, even these really rare things. if you're a metal detectorist, it's not really all that far. I don't think they said exactly where this one was, but the previous one was just on a riverbank. So, I mean, they just find them. But if farmers' fields, if you're tilling a field, and like here we can find arrowheads and things, whether they might find Roman coins or pottery or that sort of thing, that is what happens. So, anyway, at the end of last time, we got to the end of the Roman Empire. And so sort of continue from there, but not exactly in real order. After Theodosius, Theodosius in the late 300s, 390s, had a series of edicts, which then made Christianity the Roman religion, authorized, you know, the destruction of pagan temples, etc. So from then on, Christianity kind of sort of took off and spread. The Western Roman Empire, if you remember too from that coin from Honorius, Rome was sacked in 410 by the Goths, so the Roman Western power kind of declined, but the Eastern Roman power, centered at Constantinople, increased. So the Greek Orthodox Church is basically, you know, derived from the Eastern Roman Empire. So we know that as Byzantium, so the Byzantine Empire. So this particular coin is from the Byzantine Empire. It actually shows Heraclius, one of the Eastern Roman emperors, and his son. This is a Solidus, so this is the gold denomination. But now since you start seeing Christian symbology in a lot of these coins, so in this case you have this cross, you know, this little stand here. So this is called the cross potent because it has these sort of crossbars on it. But now things like crosses start to appear, or by this time have become fairly prevalent. Here's another one. This one's from Hungary. So this is now actually in the 1200s, so 600 years newer than the previous coin. But it's got this interesting cross here, where it's kind of got this sort of this also double bar, but it's also got these moons and stars and pellets. One reference implied that things in fours implied the four Gospels. So I'm not sure if this particular one does or not, but potentially. And the reverse is another cross with four pellets. Here's one from Levin the First. This is from Armenia, also around the similar time. His interesting connection is that by this time it was the Third Crusade. So you had the Holy Land captured by the Muslims, and then you have various Christians try to come and take it back. The Third Crusade, if you've seen the movie Kingdom of Heaven, with Orlando Bloom was the main character, but you had, it was fighting over Jerusalem, so you have Saladin as the Islamic personage, and then Jerusalem held by Christian hands, and then the war over it. So this was the Third Crusade, and he pledged support for the Crusade, but he actually died before he could officially give it. But the reverse of his coin, that's called a patriarchal cross, where you have a smaller crossbar on top of the normal bar. So this would actually, this represents the INRI on the top of a cross in the upper bar. Here's one, another one from Hungary. That's a little bit later, 1387. It's Maria of Anjou, which potentially was a French woman who got married into the Hungarian family, although things were kind of strange then. So it has her monogram here. But the reverse is it's called the Lorraine cross, where it's very similar to the patriarchal cross, where you have this smaller crossbar on top, but it's got these sort of triangular sides. So this is also associated with Joan of Arc. So it's interesting that it's on a Hungarian coin. But again, Christian symbology just keeps going. It's another one. The Byzantines had lots of different kinds of coins. This one is known as a trachy, and it's kind of an interesting picture here because it's a very curved coin. You'll see that in person. The reason for the curves, I haven't gotten a good reference, but one reference implied that they stack easier. but not sure if it's just a better minting process. Chip might have a better idea. So, yeah, could be. So this one has a figure on one side. This isn't a very well attributed one. But the reverse side, you have this other figure holding this, which is a globus crucis. So the globe represents the earth, and the cross represents sort of, Christianity's power over the earth. So the globe itself was even back to a Roman symbol, or probably even earlier, where you have an emperor holding a globe representing everything. But now they put a cross on top of the globe. What's interesting about this one is actually got two crossbars. So it's not the standard globus crucis, chrysager, something a little different. Here's another Solidus. This one's Justinian. And he's holding a globus crucis on the obverse here. So it's a very tall cross, but you see the globe in his hand. And the reverse is interesting. Go back to that. Sure. There you go. So you have the portrait of Justinian, and then you have here, that's a very small hand kind of holding out. And then you have a globe here and the cross coming out of it. So. And the reverse, well, it shows this figure. I'm holding both a standard here with a row on top, as in a Cairo, and then holding another globus crucis. So what this figure is interesting. If you remember from before, you have victory. So you have the Roman personification of victory, being like, military battle, that was won, where it's a figure with wings, two wings, holding a wreath and a palm branch. Well, now you have a similar figure, a figure with wings, and this legend here is Victoria, AVG. Well, legend here is also Victoria, AVG. Although instead of holding the palm branch and the wreath, now it's holding Christian symbols. So depending on what reference you read, some references say this is victory, other references say this is an angel. So, that's a gold coin, that's a silver coin. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that, is this really the sort of where the angelic personification comes from? I mean, Rick and I were talking about this earlier, where biblically, we have the cherubim, seraphim having six wings. You have angels being ordinary people or possibly shining ordinary people, you might be entertaining an angel unawares. So is this representation really just a pagan representation sort of carried forward? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, that should be a hint. Yeah, you would think. The glowing probably gives it away too. But here's a little more recent coin. This is from 1787. It's an Austrian coin, but this time it's showing the kind of a Austrian eagle. So you have the two-headed eagle. Sort of you see that symbol too in Russia, but it's holding a Globus Crucis too. So that kind of symbol just kind of keeps going. Christine coins. Byzantines also started to do that. So here's a portrait of Christ. This is a coin from Basil II, about around the year 1000. He's also holding the Book of the Gospels. So it's a very Christian portrait.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is approximately this time. I know the Third Crusade was in the 1200s, so it was around 1000 to, 1350, 1400, that kind of time frame. So there were five crusades? At least four. It's that time period, yeah, for here. Yeah, but stay tuned. Mm-hmm, yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually a probably surprising number. In this particular time period, a lot of the Byzantine coins did. Like even that trachy, depending on the particular trachy you look at, sometimes it's a Roman portrait, sometimes it's a Christ portrait. So at least from this time period, it was not an uncommon representation. No, it's a little bit of a trick to find a nice looking one where you can actually see the detail. But the types themselves are not really uncommon. Yeah, so Chip is a... Yeah, so he's got some. and the reverse, this particular one just has an inscription. So it's actually, you know, Jesus Christus. I mean, actually, he spells out his name on the reverse. Actually, it's interesting, too, because it's not only Jesus Christ, but Vasile of Vasile, so great king. King of Kings, there you go. Here's one, this is Bulgaria. Again, Christ standing. So this is a not Byzantine, but Bulgarian, but another Christ figure. It's a nice grade coin, but it's a very rough view of it. these coins weren't really all that wonderfully made. And the reverse shows the two rulers standing, but they're each holding a cross, which is can't really be seen well in this coin, but actually there's one right there. So even the rulers themselves are holding crosses. Some coins represent saints. You have them as personifications. This coin, the actual denomination is an angel, which at the time was 80 pence. So this is a British coin of Henry VII. And it shows Archangel Michael. So you see the wings, but he's also in armor. So you think of shows like Touched by an Angel and things like that in modern times, where angels are sort of touchy-feely kind of people. Well, they weren't really. It was angels that destroyed cities and all. So this is more of the military representation. And he's stomping on a dragon. So and the reverse is it shows a ship with the royal arms, but there's a cross here too. And actually, the legend itself, by that cross, save us, O Christ, our Redeemer. I mean, so you have the British ruler actually putting that on the coin. Here's another one. This is St. Mark this time. This is a coin from Venice. So you have the Doge of Venice, or the leader of Venice, kneeling to St. Mark, as they say, St. Mark. So he's got a halo, too. And so think San Marco Plaza. Jill can actually explain further. She's actually been there. But as the tomb of Mark. So I'll put that in the coin. And the reverse shows a figure of Christ inside of a little oval. A little more modern times, 1819. This is another British coin. You notice actually the Roman-style portrait. So this is George III, the one where he had the revolution against. But he has a laurel wreath, just like the Roman emperors did. And the reverse is around there, yeah, actually. Yeah, I think that's right. So That's actually sort of like the bull bust representation too. So very, very thick neck, and you know. And then the reverse is St. George slaying a dragon, so the common bear symbol. Here's one that's interesting. This is a German coin, sort of. It's supposedly a coin, although it's not identified well. Even the seller didn't know really where it's from. It's 18th century, so 1700 time frame, but it shows the Ten Commandments, and specifically, honor thy father and thy mother as the commandment. And the reverse is interesting, too. The legend have it translated as, whoever enjoys loving his children holds God's commandment. That was thanks to Ed Judy, actually. Asked him for advice on this one. Related to the obverse. But you have these three plants, where you have this large plant in the center and these two small ones, representing Calvary. And Jill and I were actually in Piasa, Illinois this weekend. This is actually a picture from a church in Piasa. So. So other places too. Axum is interesting. The Ethiopia was a major Christian empire, starting in the 300s or so onward. It's not well known, but they did issue coinage. They have a lot of ruins left that are obelisks and temples and things. The reverse shows a cross here. It's also got this little gold dot in the center. So it's one of the world's first bimetallic coins, where you have multiple metals combined. What's interesting about Axum is that, if you read books like this one, Lost Ark of the Covenant by Bob Cornuke, there is a church called St. Mary's Church of Zion, where there has been a ceremony called Timcat, which is a procession from there to the river and then commemorating Christ's baptism and back every year, where there is a guardian who guards, supposedly, the Ark of the Covenant, that they become a guardian. They are in the church. They never leave. When one of them dies, they have a specially trained replacement who goes in and spends his life in it, guarding it. So for 2,000 years, they believe they have the Ark of the Covenant. And Chuck Nusser believes it, too. There's a little website where he has gone on a trip with Bob Cornuke and saw it the church for himself. You can't actually see the Ark. They don't let anybody actually get close, but they've been doing this procession for since they claim to have gotten it in 8330 is where it was claimed to have moved there. So, coins of Axum are not common to come across. But. This particular one, too, it doesn't even have a known king. I mean, it doesn't have the name of the king on it, so there's no records of who this king actually was, just that it was the king of Axum. Well, here's one. I mentioned the Crusades. So this is a Crusader coin. This one's from, 1287 to 1308 is when this was issued. Guy the Second, Guy the Second, probably. There were several kingdoms established when various areas were conquered by Crusaders. This is from the Duchy of Athens. There were a couple different groups. There was the Kingdom of Jerusalem was another one. Yeah, Chip actually had a coin from that last time around. This representation serves a cross. It's actually a very thin coin, which is why you see this sort of distortion. And the other side shows a castle, and there's a cross up here. So this is Crusader coins are obtainable. And you have the other side of it too. So this is a coin from Diyarbakir, and this is also minted about the same time, 1194, 1201. But it's interesting because it has a very Roman sort of style, where it has two portraits, one representing Sol, the sun, and one representing Jupiter. So remember those types from before. This is presumably to commemorate an astrological event that Jupiter went behind the sun in 1189. So they issued this coin to commemorate that. And that's the reverse, so it just has this sort of Islamic script on it. But I managed to get a translation of this, and it actually says, the prince defender, Salah al-Din Yusuf. Salah al-Din is Saladin. So he was the major Muslim leader in the Third Crusade that they were fighting. So this particular coin was issued by someone who was kind of under his control. So not issued by Saladin directly, but by one of the people that he had already sort of kind of imposed his will upon in the Muslim side. Communion tokens, another Christian connection. Communion tokens are interesting. They apparently were started in the late 1500s, although they were most popular in the 17th, 18th centuries in Scotland. This particular one is from 1806, from Ochiltree, which is the place name, and Kirk apparently means church. So this is in Ayrshire in Scotland. Communion tokens were used as sort of an identification that you could take communion. So they would actually use this as sort of an identifying feature. Also, in times of persecution, it was a way to show that you were really a Christian in service in a secret way. In terms of, at the time, what the value was, or right now, if you want to buy one, $25-$30. There was a website we came across the other day, that actually Jill found, that has bunches and bunches and bunches of different kinds of these tokens. Because there were a lot of churches that did this kind of thing, a lot of different styles. This particular one is a small square one or that's made out of lead, but there's lots of other kinds as well. And the reverse has a CD, which is a Coina Domini, near the Lord's Supper. So. Well, that it was tied to a particular church, so that way they knew which ones of their congregation actually belonged and which ones could have the Lord's Supper. One of the references I was reading implied that only once or twice a year they would actually do communion. So it was at those times to identify which people really should and shouldn't. And then also, as a secondary purpose, it can also identify you as a Christian without people really knowing that, you know, sort of like the like a fish symbol or other ways. This particular one, yeah, although they used them for several hundred years, starting in the late 1500s. Yeah. Money, no. No. No, it was definitely for a religious purpose. Yeah. Probably, yeah. They seemed to imply, at least from what I was reading, that they were kind of sort of recirculated, that they wouldn't be tied to a person by name necessarily, that just if someone left the congregation and someone else came in. So you probably wouldn't be buried with one, but someone else will get one, you know, the next time someone else joined. But yeah. So. Here's an interesting thing. The jury's still kind of open what this really is. This is a lead disc, about the size of a half dollar. It has the legend in reverse, H. Charis Amy, which can be translated as I am grace or I am gracious. The best guess is this is a communion stamp. So when you actually make the communion wafers, this is a way to impress a pattern on them. The person I got this from swears this is a Byzantine. I showed this to a couple of professors at WashU. They think it's a lot newer. So I don't know for sure. But it's interesting. So there's a lot of, you know, Christian-related things that even, you know, aren't actually money, but you can still get as coinage kind of things. So, and King James. So thank the King James Bible. There you go. this is a nice one. It's not that easy to get a good readable portrait, or viewable portrait of James. So it was nice to find this one. This is a sixpence. Yeah, this is the VI. This one is actually from 1624. It's actually dated. So this would be 13 years after the first printing of the King James Bible. Okay, so that's anything for symbolism. Now, back to Israel. Thinking of the persecutions again, we had the 10 that we talked about last time from the Romans. Well, Germany. This particular German coin has Paul von Hindenburg on the obverse, as in the Hindenburg Zeppelin. He defeated Hitler in an election to become the president of Germany, but he was forced to nominate Hitler as chancellor. So he was the one that really gave Hitler some power beyond the people themselves. And the swastika reverse. So there's lots and lots of different kinds of Nazi coins, but this is one particular one. He was just named after him, just as sort of an honorary thing. Yep.
Quick question. Now, I knew Hitler joined, you know, the political party.
Yeah.
But I wasn't aware that that symbol was used outside that party.
Yeah, I mean, it became just sort of the Third Reich symbol. So, before the war, at least, but the Nazi Party itself had already gained, you know, control. I mean, that from what I was reading, that's why Hindenburg had to nominate him chancellor, just because there was already enough political support for him to be in some charge. So Hindenburg was kind of forced into it. So, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. This particular coin is actually it commemorates Hindenburg himself, but Hindenburg actually died in 1934. So this is a coin from 1936. So this is now actually really issued by Hitler in control of Germany. Yeah. So. Okay. So at the end of World War II, World War I, Britain was in possession of a fair amount of the Near East, where they set up a region called the British Mandate of Palestine, which is the region of Palestine, a region that became known as Transjordan, and a few other bits of territory around there. They were in control from about 1920 to 1948. For the first few years of it, they were using British coinage. But then the region of Palestine, it started to issue their own coinage. So this is a coin actually from Palestine. So this particular one, it's in Hebrew, it's in English, it's in Arabic, and says Palestine. It's a little Alice break here. So, but it's 1933 is the date. And the reverse, it's 100 mils. They had 1,000 mils per pound. So they're basing it kind of off the British system in terms of the main denomination, but they came up with their own subdivision, so 100 mils. No, this was only used for just that time when it was still Palestine. And they didn't issue very many years' worth. I know they had a 1927 issue and a 1933 issue, and I think there was one more following. So there wasn't very much time. By 1948, there was a UN mandate to set up countries, basically, to establish a homeland for Jews and set up Jordan as a country. The Jews were in favor of it, the Arabs were not. There was the first Arab-Israeli war was 1948. During that war, Israel started to issue their first real coinage. So this is actually an example. There was a cutlery factory. I mean, they made knives, forks, spoons. They used a cutlery press and dies that were made to actually start making these coins. So this particular coin actually arrived in the mail yesterday, but it's in Hebrew, but it's dated 1948. So it's the only denomination that Israel issued in 1948. So this was amongst the first, I think they made 49,000 of them, of that year. So that's the beginning of Israel, modern Israel. And what's interesting is that they picked symbolism that was based off of the earlier coinage. So this is, a bunch of grapes, as you saw from the prutas from the first century AD. Or modern times too. This is what was interesting. This is a little medallion. It was probably minted about 1971, although it doesn't say specifically. But this side of the medallion, Judea captive, 70 CE. So if you remember from the first session, the Jewish war, first Jewish war, well, against the Romans, destruction of the temple, 70 AD, Rome 1. This is another variant of the Judea Capta kind of Roman coin. So when Rome issued a series of coins commemorating the victory, this is one style. So this medallion has this on one side of it. And the other side, Israel liberated in 1948. So Israel is now a country. So now you go from the captive representation where you have Judea as sort of this kneeling figure, Rome's power on top, to raising the kid up to the sun and planting things and everyone's happy. And it's an interesting style. Right, this particular one is just a medallion, doesn't have monetary value. Yeah. Well, okay, end times things. Mystery of Babylon. Woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy. Mystery of Babylon the Great, mother of harlots, foundations of the earth. It's interesting that there's a few modern things which kind of fit this pattern. Here's one that I don't have that I've been trying to track down, but this is a papal medallion. So again, not a coin for buying things with, but a medal that was issued by one of the popes. So in this case, this is Pope Pius, or sorry, Leo the 12th. You read Leo the 12th here. And it was issued in 1825. And he uses a PM here again. So if you remember from the Roman coins, Pontifex Maximus. So, you know, the leader of the religion, the head priest. But the reverse is interesting because it shows this woman seated, holding a globe or a chalice, you know, with the inscription "Sedet super universum," you know, the world is her seat. So, well, here's, you know, the Roman Catholic Church, you know, seated over the globe of the earth. this is in Hyslop, actually. So, if you read Hyslop's Two Babylons, this is the coin that he the medal that he illustrates. And Europa, this is a 2 euro coin. This particular one was issued 2006. So they've had the style for a couple years, but this one's just from last year. There is an early myth of Zeus turning himself into a bull in order to sort of woo this woman named Europa. Europa was sort of encouraged to go to sit on the bull. She was taken to Crete. They had kids. So they kind of revisited that myth here. But Europa was the source for the name Europe. So from a Christian perspective, well, that's Europe riding the bull, riding a beast. So. And this is the one that that Rick showed in, earlier on during one of his sermons. This is a modern Israeli coin. This is actually a commemorative coin where there's no version of this for normal circulation, but it was meant for collectors specifically. And there was actually several biblical issues. But this particular one, it's the verses of Genesis 11, 1 through 9 about the Tower of Babel written in such a way that it looks like a tower. So here you have a coin of Israel in a new shekel denomination commemorating Tower of Babel. So, yeah. And it actually says Tower of Babel on it. So, and this was issued in, yeah. But it, yeah, we did, and it's true. Actually, I also brought the envelope, too. I actually got this from Israel. So it's not just an Israeli coin, but it was actually mailed to me from Tel Aviv. So what? This was actually interesting, too, because it was actually minted in the Royal Canadian Mint on behalf of Israel. The Royal Canadian Mint. So they issued it, they sent it to Israel, and then they sent it back here. So, and one more thing. This is a Hungarian coin. Well, actually, it's a Transylvanian coin, but it was under grouping with Hungary at the time. So it shows the coat of arms here. But the reverse shows the mother and child representation. So, Mary and Jesus. So there's a number of coins that look along these lines, where you have little baby Jesus holding a scepter or globe or something, and then Mary sitting there. And presumably this TR is the Transylvania connection. But, well, here's a coin from Rome, Julia Domna. This is Isis and Horus, so the Egyptian deity Isis holding Horus. So is this yet another co-opted Catholic representation of some pagan figure that's now become the popular press? So, and that's it, I think. From the first session, I had talked about the tribute penny. I didn't have it in hand because I couldn't find it. I came across it and brought it today, so I'll pass that around. So, that's sort of a survey of the last 3,000 years in coinage. So, so if, any questions or anything? Mm-hmm.